From Paris to Portland, you've picked up the guidebooks. You've followed the advice. This is the Fromer Travel Show. Pauline Fromer, president of Fromer Media, and Jason Cochran, editor-in-chief of Fromers.com, with the most complete, the most up-to-date travel information available anywhere. The pages of the Fromer's guidebooks come alive right now, exclusively on 77 WABC.
And welcome to the Fromer Travel Show. I'm Pauline Fromer.
And I'm Jason Cochran.
And if it sounds a little different today, that's because I'm in Boston. But that doesn't mean that anything else is different. We still want you to call us. The number is 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. And to get the chat started, we're going to talk about tipping in travel. It seems lately that wherever you turn, somebody has their hand out. The most recent thing in the news was that Frontier Airlines was asking that its flight attendants be tipped. Jason, can you give a little background on that?
You know, it made a lot of headlines recently in the travel world, but it's been actually happening for a few years. It has to do with when you make a purchase on Frontier, you're able to give them a little bit of tip after the purchase. It's not, you know, just they're walking up and down the aisle, like passing the collection plate like at church. But it started a debate. You know, there's what I call tip creep. More and more and more we're being asked to tip. You go to the coffee bar now and you pay with a credit card. You know, they swivel the register iPad around and you have to tell them whether you want to tip them or not. If you pay with cash, you don't have to. It's just getting more and more confusing. And I think it's time to talk about this a little bit. When shouldn't you tip? When should you tip? You know, is it too much? Has it gone too far? I personally think that what's happening is business owners are encouraging tipping so that there's not so much pressure on them to pay them a higher wage.
Sure.
That's a separate issue, of course, and I'm sure everyone wants to be paid more. Some industries have been working this way for years. So it's a big question.
Yeah. Should there be higher payment for the people who work in the travel industry, or is it okay for us travelers to supplement incomes? I mean, when you think about cruising, you're often charged $15 a day automatically that goes towards your cabin steward, your waiter, to all of the people who serve you on board the ship. Instead of having that tip added, shouldn't it be part of the base rate of the cruise? I mean, there's arguments on either side.
You know, it's interesting. Marriott has gotten into some trouble with this recently. A few years ago, it put envelopes in the rooms that said, "The envelope, please. Remember to tip your housekeepers." But at the same time, staff of Marriott hotels have been striking against it in certain states because they're not being paid enough. And so taken together, it's not a very pretty picture of how they're paying their employees. But, you know, there's two realities, I guess, we could talk about. Yes, we're going to need to pay these people somehow, and right now this is the way to do it. And also, what kind of changes do we need to make sure that they can eat after doing a full day's work?
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people are surprised when they do a tour, a guided tour for the first time, by which I mean one of those multi-day tours where you all go to a hotel together, then get on a bus. On those, you often have to tip, and that can be a big extra expense that a lot of travelers aren't expecting. I see we have some calls coming in. Let's turn to Roberta in Staten Island. Hey, Roberta, thank you so much for calling into the travel show. So nice to speak with you.
Yeah, I've been listening to your show for so many years when your father was there.
Oh, wonderful. So I'll give him your best.
Thank you. I just want to know, I'm finally booking some flights for my grandchildren. I've never been on an airplane. They're dying to go, and I'm trying to get a discount, you know, the best fare possible. And I'm worried. If I go online and I look at these companies that are not airlines, but like cheap air. I mean, how do I know that they're legitimate? I'm worried. If I give them money, how do I know I'm getting a ticket?
That's a good question to ask, actually. Nobody's ever asked us that before. There are some major companies that have been in business forever. I can give you their names. We know they're legit. Expedia, Orbitz, Travelocity, Cheapo Air actually is one of them. They've been in business forever. Yeah. We did a study on Fromers.com about which airline sites give you the best prices. And we actually found one called Momondo, which is M-O-M-O-N-D-O. That has very good pricing, as does one called Skyscanner.net. Jason, do you have anything to add?
Well, the one thing to remember is sometimes the sites will sell you the ticket directly, and some sites will pass you off to another site because it found the fare for you. That's called an aggregator. Momondo will do that. You'll go to Momondo, you'll see all these different companies pitching you different prices, and then you go to that third company to buy it. If you just want to buy directly from the one website, you don't have to go through a middleman. You just go to, like, Expedia, I think is a good one that everyone knows. Or what I do, I look at the airline that comes up in the results on Expedia, and then I also go to that very airline's website just to see if their deal isn't a little bit sweeter. Southwest Airlines, for example, you're never going to find on these other people's sites. You'll have to go to Southwest if you want a Southwest ticket.
Right. Very true. I hope that helps, Roberta. How lovely that your grandchildren will get to fly for the first time. That's exciting. Yes. Thank you. Let's turn next to Dominic in Brooklyn. Hey, Dominic, you are live on the Fromer Travel Show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Pauline. Hello, Jason.
Hi.
I'm planning a trip to Italy this summer, and we have the tours all arranged, but the question is regarding airfare. I've been looking, and I know not to book until about 8 weeks out, but the prices that I'm coming up with are like $2,100 round trip. I'm really asking, how much do I expect it to go down?
Well, so what is a typical airfare in summertime to Italy? Yeah, it's not $2,100. That's why you wait until 8 weeks before. I think you'll see that go down $1,000 to $1,200 by the time it's about 8 weeks out. What do you think, Pauline?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things you may want to look at, I don't know if you're only looking at travel into and out of Rome, but in recent years, there's more competition going to Milan. So it may be significantly cheaper for you to go into and out of Milan this summer. Have you been looking at Rome and Milan as your gateways?
Actually, starts off in Venice. So I've looked at Milan and Venice as the two spots to land in Italy.
And probably the problem is Venice. That's an additional flight. There's no direct flights into Venice. So I would say look at Milan only, because you're going to pay a premium to fly into Venice usually.
The nice thing is it's super easy to get around Italy on the train. It only takes a few hours to get from city to city. So I wouldn't be afraid of flying into one city over another. You know, it can take you an hour to drive from Rome to the airport in Rome, when it can take you 2 hours to, you know, to get to another city. So, you know, you're not saving that much time if you fly to the city that you're determined to go to.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We're a party of 12. So what I was thinking, if we fly into Milan, we would rent or charter like a bus to get us to Venice.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. One thing, do not look for a party of 12's worth of airfares. Interestingly enough, when the airlines put out their... airlines will often discount like 2, 3, 4 seats. And then if you have 5 people, instead of getting the discounts for those 4 seats, you're going to be bumped up to the next fare class. With 12, you said, you're going to be up a couple of fare classes and you're not going to get discounts. I highly recommend you don't book all 12 seats together. Book them in groups of 2 or 3. And that way you have a better chance of getting the lower fare class, if that makes sense.
Couples, so we've pretty much decided that everyone will book their own seats and we'll just be on the same flight.
Terrific.
And Delta does offer a direct nonstop to Venice.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I may be wrong, but it's probably not as inexpensive as other destinations because it is an unusual itinerary. There's not going to be as much competition for it.
I don't know if you could answer this, but approximately, if you know, what would a fee be for like a bus or... train I know would be much cheaper, transportation down from Milan to Venice?
I don't know offhand. I'm sorry. If you go to, there's a good site called Rome to Rio. It's the words Rome, R-O-M-E, and then the number 2, and then Rio, like Rio de Janeiro. And it gives you all of the options from getting from point A to point B, and it usually will also give you the price. I'm looking at the clock. We have to take our first break of this show, but don't let that stop you from calling. Last week was kind of a bummer. We had a slow start to the show in terms of calls, and then we got inundated at the end of the show. We couldn't take all the calls. So 800-848-9222 is our number. Before we go to break, though, I must thank our sponsor, Allianz Travel Insurance, and I know a lot of travelers thank them too when they save their hides, because Allianz covers all of the disasters that can happen when you travel. I'm talking about losing your luggage, or not making a flight, or missing the cruise ship and having it leave the port without you, meaning that you have to get to the next port on your own dime. All of those things and others are covered by Allianz's policies. To find out more, visit allianztravelinsurance.com. That's allianztravelinsurance.com.
Pauline Frommer, Jason Cochran, The Frommer Travel Show, only here where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
This week's program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment with Allianz. Visit allianztravelinsurance.com. And also, give us a call. 800-848-9222 is our number. We also take questions by email. The address for that is Frommer, F-R-O-M-M-E-R, Travel Show, at yahoo.com. Let's go right back to the phones. We have Jay in Plainview, New York. Hey, Jay, what do you say?
Hey, how are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Okay. I actually have two questions. One, what is the benefit of getting an enhanced driver's license for...
Okay. Yeah. Enhanced driver's license, for people who don't know, it's basically a driver's license that is backed up with just a little bit of extra proof of who you are, proof of U.S. citizenship, identity, state residency, you know, all that stuff. So enhanced driver's license are now required if you want to cross into Canada by the border over land. It's not good if you fly, but it is good if you land. You can't have a regular pass of driver's license and cross across from the land into Canada. So the EDL is really good for that. It's also, if you have one, it's going to help you sign up for a program like PreCheck or Global Entry, because you'll have done a lot of the advanced work proving who you are. You know, more and more TSA checkpoints, too, are really leaning towards requiring enhanced driver's licenses. So I really recommend that if you don't have one, you try to move over to one the next time you renew.
That's
you
great.
Said you had another question, Jay?
I do. What do you suggest? I'm going to be doing a lot of traveling, which is I'm very happy about. We're going to be going to Hawaii, and we're going to Florida in the next couple of weeks.
Nice.
Now, what is the benefit or suggestion to get through the TSA faster? Somebody told me there is something that you can do with a passport or something that
yeah,
gets through the line.
It's actually one of the things I just mentioned. You can be a member of TSA PreCheck or Global Entry. They cost the same. Global or a little bit more. I think Global Entry might be 15 or 20 more. Global Entry also gets you back to the border quicker when you come from other countries. But basically, it puts you in the easy line where you don't have to take off your shoes, you don't have to take your laptop out, you don't have to separate your liquids. You coast right through in TSA PreCheck, but you have to be approved by the government to be a permanent member. That's why EDLs will really help you on that. The other method that some people use is a company called Clear, and that's sort of a private contractor that does the same essential service. But Clear is available at far fewer airports than the TSA PreCheck line is. So I personally go for the Global Entry, because if you buy Global Entry, you automatically get PreCheck. If you buy PreCheck, you don't automatically get Global Entry.
And it used to be that you had to apply for this in person out at the airport, but now the TSA has contracted with Staples. So at some Staples stores, you can do it. And I happened to notice when I was at Penn Station last week that they have a place where you can sign up for pre-check in Penn Station. So if you're in Manhattan, that's an easy place to do it. I hope it helps, Jay. Let's turn next to Melissa in Denville, New Jersey. Hey, Melissa, you are now live on the Frommer Travel Show.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
My husband and I are going to be traveling to San Diego next week for vacation, and I have gotten conflicting information about whether we need to rent a car or not.
Well, that's interesting. I was in San Diego about a month ago, and I also faced that conundrum. I ended up deciding not to rent a car for two reasons. Well, really, one major reason, the cost. The car rental was not cheap, and my hotel was going to charge me $50 a night to park it there, and there really wasn't any other parking nearby. So what I ended up doing is relying just on taxis while I was there, and I'm sure I spent less money. And actually walking around. I mean, it really depends what part of San Diego you're in, but it's a fairly walkable city. I mean, you won't be able to get everywhere on your own 2 feet, but I think a combination of walking and taxis or Uber or Lyft will be less expensive, especially if you're staying in a hotel that has one of these crazy parking charges.
Okay. And there's also a good trolley system, too, from what I've read.
Yeah. I didn't end up using it, but absolutely. Yeah, it's not hard to use. Have a wonderful time. Make sure you go to Balboa Park. It's this exquisite area that was set up for a World's Fair. It has this beautiful Spanish Revival architecture, some incredible museums. San Diego's a hidden gem. Not enough people go. I'm so glad you're going. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling. So, Jason, we started out the show talking about tipping. Do you tip when you travel? Do you tip the chambermaid?
Well, I tip everyone else. I'm really not good at tipping the chambermaid. I shouldn't admit this on air. Partly because I forget. And partly when I do remember, I'm like, the person who cleaned my room last night did the job. And I'm tipping the person who's come in, right? I'm not tipping someone before they've done it. So that confuses me. But I do know that they need it. And I find out, like at a Marriott, that they're not getting a living wage, you have to. I mean, it's just sort of a travesty that you can work, 40 hours a week or more and still not have enough to live on. And until we put enough pressure on the system and that changes that, I guess we're going to have to make up the shortfall.
I always leave a tip. In fact, today I'm doing this show from my hotel room, and I left some money on the pillow. And for the first time, the chambermaid wrote on the notepad next to the bed, "Thank you so much." That was the first time I've ever gotten an acknowledgement of a tip. Usually,
I have
the
been
tip
told
is just gone.
At some hotels, they do pool the tips, but I guess you can never be sure. How much did you leave? How much do you leave per night?
I leave $2 or $3 usually.
If anyone else has some thoughts on the tipping question, the number is 800-848-9222. We're going to take a call now from Patricia, who's calling from Rocky Point, New York. Hi, Patricia. You're live on the Travel Show. How can we help you?
Yes, love your show. Thank you for taking the call. I'm going to be in Napa, California for 3 days, the end of March. I don't know where to begin. I would think perhaps a bed and breakfast, but I understand some of the vineyards have accommodations. Can you guide me in any way of what I should see in there? And should I stay in Napa itself?
What do you think about that, Pauline? I'm personally not a fan of staying in the town of Napa because it's so bucolic outside of it, and so many vineyards do offer accommodations. But you can. The nice thing about staying in this town of Napa is you're much nearer some of the tasting rooms that might be situated in the city. You're near the food market. You get more of the flavor without having to drive around. But it's such a huge area. It's there's many towns over many, many miles. And I know just people tend to drive from winery to winery, and they just sort of make up their, that looks good, we'll pull in there. There must be 60 or 70 different wineries. Pauline, would you have any recommended course of action in Napa?
I would say not in the city itself. You're right. There are much lovelier places to stay outside the city. The thing about Napa, you have to realize you can't drink wine for that many hours in a day. So you have to come up with other things to do besides drinking. Yeah. I love, there's this amazing contemporary and modern art museum there. I'm blanking on that. It's called the DeRosa. And it's just an extraordinary museum to be in such a rural area. It really is like a city-level museum. So go to the DeRosa. Also, the Charles Schulz Museum.
That's in Sonoma.
That's in Sonoma, but the Sonoma's
not far. Yeah, you can drive through the mountains. About an hour away, yeah.
Yeah, and that's so much fun. If you're a fan of Peanuts, it's a great museum. What were you about to suggest, Jason?
Also in Napa County, there's a town called Calistoga, which many, many, many years ago became famous for its thermal mud baths. There's some bubbling mud pools naturally occurring there. And little spas, very inexpensive, have sprung up and have been attracting people for many generations. And you just go and you sit in this bathtub that they pour all this hot bubbling mud all over you. It is a very strange feeling. It's like being in a pool full of chocolate pudding, but it's a lot of fun. And it's not something you're not going to be able to experience pretty much anywhere on the East Coast that I know of, unless they ship the mud in. So I recommend Calistoga as well. But there's all these little markets on every corner. There's fresh food pretty much everywhere. It's part of their lifestyles there. The last thing I would recommend, there is something called the Wine Train. It's a bit more expensive, but they'll take you from by rail from winery to winery, and it keeps you from having to drive, which is, of course, a major concern when you are tasting wine all day. So I'd also look into the Wine Train.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to take another break. Let me remind everybody, we want to hear from you. 800-848-9222 is the number. Don't turn that dial. It's only going to be a couple minutes, and then we'll be back.
The Frommer's Guidebooks come alive. Pauline Frommer and Jason Cochran. The Frommer Travel Show on 77 WABC.
This week's program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment with Allianz. Visit Allianz travelinsurance.com. And let's return to the phones. Our number, once again, 800-848-9222. We have Bob on the line. Hey, Bob, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I heard you talking about TSA PreCheck, and I have it, but I'm a little bit confused about how to use it, and I was hoping you guys could straighten me out. I have...
Okay, sure. You have a global entry already?
I do have a global entry card, and my understanding is that in order to get PreCheck, the airline has to put it on your boarding pass, that the card doesn't really do any...
If you're a member of PreCheck or a global entry, you get a 9-digit number called the known traveler number, or KTN, as you'll see it sometimes. You need to go when you book an airline ticket or when you're managing your reservation before you fly. There's somewhere on that in the website, there will be a place to enter in your personal profile your known traveler number. If you're a member of that airline, you can just do it in your permanent profile, and it'll keep showing up every time you book a ticket. When you print your ticket out at the airport or before, you may not have noticed it before, there will be a little TSA Pre logo or words on there. Now, there are some airlines that do not participate in PreCheck. Most of the major American ones do, but like if you're flying internationally from America to another country, you may have to wait in the normal line. But you won't be able to go through PreCheck unless you make sure it's on your ticket. And the way to do that is to go onto the airline website ahead of time and make sure it's entered in. If you don't see it when you get to the airport, you can walk right up to the desk and ask them to put it in. But you need to know that 9-digit known traveler number before you can do any of it.
So I've done all of that. It's stored in my profile. I fly mostly Frontier. And I'm guessing then it's just some kind of oversight or computer glitch on the airline's part, because it never seems to show up on my boarding pass.
Yeah, I don't know if Frontier may not. Is it one of the ones that participates in TSA Pre? There's
a
place for it
on
its website.
On my profile to put in my known traveler number.
It should work. It should work. Go to the clerk next time you check in and ask them what's up, because it should work.
Let me ask one really quick question. Are there some regional airports or local airports that are so small they don't honor PreCheck?
Yeah, and some large airports that when it gets quiet, they don't. You know, they rather than staff two lines, they just put everyone in the same line if there's not a long one. But yeah, it can be so quiet, you just don't need it. But think about it. You don't need it at a regional airport where the wait would be 3 minutes anyway. I mean, who cares?
Right. No, but thank you so much. Yuck. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And I was just going to say, if you went to the effort to get global access, it's just kind of frustrating because I did it when I had to go to the airport. So it was
Is. Actually, this is the first time I've heard about it not working for someone. So I just think you might be suffering a glitch.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's go back to another call. We have Ken from New Canaan, Connecticut. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind?
Hey, we just wanted to talk about the tipping issue.
Yeah, great.
Now, if Frontier is, I don't know, are they asking for tips? Or are they announcing it? Or how does that work?
No, it's like the subtle thing after you buy something. You know, there's an option, I think, when you're paying to say, yes, tip as well.
Oh,
so it's not
okay,
an overt thing.
Like
and it's been going on for a while. Yeah.
Well, that airline is so dirt cheap that I probably would tip those flight attendants anyway.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if they make less than other flight attendants, but yeah.
I'm sure they're all in the same union with the same rates. Now,
probably.
One of the other things I wanted to discuss is in Europe, they don't tip as much. And, you know, it was interesting when we were in Paris last year, and we had a tour guide for a couple of days taking us around, and he would tell us exactly when to tip and exactly how much to tip and when not to tip, and he would yell at people. It was amazing. So I suggest people, if they go to a foreign country, you know, like Paris or you know pick one, if you can get someone that can tell you exactly what the customs are, it's going to save you a lot of hassle and probably some money too.
Well, another thing to do is go to Frommers.com. We actually have a series of articles on the site right now about tipping in different places, and it gives you all the ins and outs of it. Go ahead, Jason.
That's right. You know, it's interesting about Europe and France especially. You mentioned Paris. They make sure, the government makes sure that everyone gets a living wage. That's why they also can't work a certain number of hours. It's one reason why river cruises are more expensive than Caribbean cruises, is because all of the people who are serving you are not going to be starving when they go home at the end of the cruise, you know. So you pay for it up front, but to make sure that everybody is happy at the end.
All right, let's get back to another call. Thank you so much. Let's talk to Howard. Hey, Howard, you are live on the Frommer Travel Show.
How are you? I believe in this. Even if someone's getting $15 an hour, which is supposedly will be a new minimum wage, how does a family live on $30,000 a year? I believe in tipping. The people that serve us are all underpaid, can't live. And I think whether they're the busboys, the waiters, maids in hotels, for many years I've always I'm taking care of them. Even the maids at my country club, I'll slip them a 20 every once in a while. Just to show appreciation. And I just came back from Europe 2 months ago. Everyone likes a tip. It's nothing wrong with tipping somebody.
Well, thank you. You have a good heart, I can tell. And I agree. Unfortunately, people are being underpaid and because it's expected that they'll tip. One thing people don't know is I know this because I was a waitress in college and afterwards, you are taxed on what the government expects you to make in tips. And so if you stiff a waiter, that waitress or waiter will still have to pay taxes on what they didn't get.
It's so unfair.
Yeah, it's terribly
unfair.
Howard
brought up an interesting point. He said you show appreciation by tipping. But at the same time, he was also saying they desperately need it. So it's really not just about appreciation. It's about making sure they're, you know, taken care of, not just telling them they did a good job.
Yeah. All right. We have to take another break. I'm sorry, Howard. We thank you so much for calling. And before I go, two things. First thing, 800-848-9222 is our number. Call during the break. The lovely Jen will hook you up. We'll get you on the air with us as soon as we return. And if you're traveling and if you want to have protection and good advice, you can't do better than getting a policy from Allianz Travel Insurance. That's because for 24 or so destinations, when you get a travel policy, you're also going to get great advice from us, from Frommers. You're going to find out how to put together a good itinerary to your destination. You're going to get a list of the very best hotels, restaurants, attractions, nightlife, shopping, and the like. It's going to help you immeasurably create the trip you want to create. So to find out more, visit A-L-L-I-A-N-Z travelinsurance.com. That's A-L-L-I-A-N-Z travelinsurance.com.
Get a jump on vacation plans. The Fromer Travel Show. Pauline Fromer and Jason Cochran. 77 WABC.
That's right. You are listening to the Fromer Travel Show. You could be talking to us. 800-848-9222 is the number. We have David on the line. Hey, David, thank you so much for calling.
Hey, thank you. It's a first-time caller. I really like the show.
Thanks.
That's great. I'm traveling to to Myrtle Beach next week. I got a really good deal. I have a feeling it was probably because it's kind of the off-season. And I know the beaches are going to be closed, but I was trying to figure out what I can do with my family while we're out there, if you had any recommendations.
Well, the beaches won't be closed. It may be a little cold for them.
Oh, yeah, really cold. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Myrtle Beach is a really resorty destination. They have some over 100 golf courses. They have dozens of tennis courts. They have mini golf. They have amusement parks. I mean, it's a place for families. So you're going to find all of those sorts of attractions there. It's known. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, especially cheesy. I mean, there's some older stuff like the Brook Green Gardens, which was founded almost 100 years ago. And it's this like huge, it's kind of like a half sculpture park, half garden with some animals thrown in. There's a couple other wildlife viewing areas. Like I think Barefoot Landing has, you know, some animals in it as well. So if you want to look at animals, great. But most of it's a little cheesier. You know, you have things like the Pirates dinner show where they're swinging from ropes as you eat with your hands and bleachers and medieval times and, you know, there's a Ripley's Believe It or Not and that kind of stuff too. So you can really go all the way towards Cheeseville, which is a lot of fun when you have kids. I'll admit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you'll have a good time even with the beaches closed, David. Thank you so much for calling. You know, we started the show announcing that I'm in Boston, and I've been to Boston many, many times, but it's that kind of city where you find there are places you haven't seen yet that are really, really cool. On this trip, I went to the Maparium. Jason, have you ever heard of the Maparium?
No, you just said it two different ways. Is it Maparium or Maparium?
I have no idea how you pronounce it, but what it is this is the world headquarters for the Christian Scientist Church. So they have a massive cathedral that looks like Hagia Sophia. In fact, it was based on that design because they needed some place that was big enough for 5,000 people. It has the longest organ in the world with the most pipes, 13,000 pipes, the smallest of which is like the size of your pinky and the biggest of which is 10 feet tall. I mean, it's a really impressive looking organ. But in the library, the Mary Baker Eddy Library next door, the architect, who actually wasn't a Christian Scientist, decided that what the building needed was a massive globe that was all made of glass that you could walk into. And so it's this incredible thing. You have to take a $6 tour, but they give you a really nice tour. Because the building was built in 1935, that's when the globe of the world is. So you see the world as it was in 1935. But unlike globes that you see from the outside, by looking at from the inside out, you actually better see the scale of countries of the world. So you'd realize, you know, when you look at a regular globe, Africa doesn't look that big, but it's massive from the inside. And it's this just stunningly beautiful globe lit up by lights in the most brilliant colors. It kind of feels, and the guide gives a whole speech quoting Nelson Mandela and quoting Martin Luther King and Amelia Earhart and all of these different people. And it has this gee whiz factor to it. It feels like something you would have done in the 1940s. But that's part of the charm. It was really just absolutely lovely.
It sounds really cool. It sounds like it's from that very optimistic period of the mid to late 30s that the World's Fair came out of.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you see all of the old names. You know, there's Yugoslavia. Boy, big as life on the map. That doesn't exist anymore. And they talk a little bit about the Christian Science Monitor, which is also in the building. Apparently, when Nelson Mandela came to Boston, he asked very specifically to speak to the staff of the Christian Science Monitor. Because when he was in jail for 27 years, he told all the reporters when they were assembled in front of him, the only newspaper he could get was the Christian Science Monitor because it was delivered by a church. And so all the inmates got to read Christian Science Monitor, and he thanked them for keeping him in touch with the rest of the world during his 27 years in captivity. And it was just very moving. It's a well-done attraction. It's absolutely fascinating. And you don't feel like you're being, you know, like somebody's trying to get you to join their church. It's not a hard sell when you go, even though it is part of the Christian Science Church. So I highly recommend it. If you're ever in Boston, it's a really cool thing to see and do if you've already done the Freedom Trail and their great art museums and all the other stuff.
The Maparium.
Yep. All right. We have to take another break, but this one's only a minute long. That's enough time for you to call us. 800-848-9222 is the number. We'll be right back.
The most popular destinations for you and your family, right here. Pauline Frommer and Jason Cochran, The Frommer Travel Show, 77 WABC.
So, Jason, you write some fabulous articles for Frommers.com, and one I found really eye-opening this week. It's about all of the dirty tricks that hotel sites are playing on us when we book that were uncovered by the British. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, I'll start it off with a question. Have you ever been to a booking site and you're looking at a hotel and there's a word on there that says 8 other people are looking at this right now?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Oh boy, I better do it. And or underneath it, it'll be another hotel that says sold out. Sorry. These tactics have been banned in the UK. Why? Huh. Here's why. Because they're not making it clear that 8 people might be looking at that hotel, but not for the same dates. So they're trying to push you into making the thinking that there's not much availability. They're deceiving you about availability. And, you know, they've also making them take sold out hotels out of the list because it's irrelevant. It just puts an added pressure tactic. It also does some of these sites, and I'm sure you've seen this. It says this room is normally $800. You're getting it for $150. They're often some of these sites will actually just take the highest price possible for that room, like Christmas week or, you know, a weekend. It's not for the same dates. That price, you would never have paid for that Tuesday you want to go. Right. And, of course, hidden charges, you know, all the extra little things that are tacked on to the hotel price after you've booked, like resort fees. Those four things were all caught. There's basically a British Consumers Commission, and you'd be surprised some of the companies that got their knuckles wrapped about this. Expedia, Booking.com, Trivago, Hotels.com, and eBookers were all told not to do it. And if they do it again, they're going to be hauled into court. Now, that's the UK. They're still allowed to do that here in the US. There are no consumer protections against this sort of, let's just say, sleight of hand. So we're still suffering it. That's why I wrote this article. So people would be aware that they're being manipulated when they see this information. It's not actually accurate. It's not for the same exact room that they want.
Right, right. It's a great article. We hope you'll look at Frommers.com. Let's get back to the phones. We have Yvette calling from Manhattan. Hey, Yvette, thank you for calling.
Hey. My daughter is going to New Orleans with her friend. She's a senior in college. And they're going to New Orleans for Mardi Gras.
And wow. Do they have a place to stay? Because books up years in advance. Okay, good.
Intercontinental Hotel.
Great.
And I was just a little concerned because I've heard some not so great stories about post-Katrina New Orleans. And I wanted to know, you know, safety-wise, how is it and what she should see and stuff. Just, you know, a little info on it.
Sure. You know, I have friends who live in New Orleans, and for them, Mardi Gras is a family occasion. They are on the floats. They are lining the streets with their kids. So, yeah, some people go to Mardi Gras and go wild. You know, there are those videos of girls lifting up their tops. Mm-hmm. But it also is a place where for the families of New Orleans. So if she's not a kid who usually goes crazy, I wouldn't be too worried about her. I think you can go there safely. You just want to keep your wits about you because, you know, with so many people there, yeah, certain things can go wrong. Yeah, sometimes pickpockets may come to an event like Mardi Gras just because they know there's going to be so many people there. Jason, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, and so many drunk people. I think that's, a lot of it is people preying on people who, you know, are not with it. So if you trust your daughter, that goes a long way. I'd also just recommend staying in the tourist district. You know, some of the terrible crime statistics you hear are in other parts of the town that aren't so touristy. So, you know, in the cemeteries, don't go wandering into the cemeteries where there's no one, you know, around.
Right.
I think if she sticks where people are and doesn't get, you know, blitzed, I think it'll be fine. And sticks with her friends as well. Everyone should have a buddy.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for calling, Yvette. All right. Let's try and squeeze in a call from Gina in Edgewater, New Jersey. Hey, Gina, you're live on the Frommer Travel Show. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I love your show. I have a question. I'm going to go to Charleston, South Carolina for like 2 or 3 days. And they said it's near Georgia. And I was wondering, what would you recommend to do around there? Like go to Savannah or...
Well, you can go to Savannah. I mean, we actually have a book that combines the two because that is the classic itinerary. You go to Charleston and you go to Savannah. You look at historic houses. You visit Civil War battlefields. You can go boating. I mean, Jason, what would you say?
I love Charleston. I don't think you should split Savannah. Go another time to Savannah. It has its own charms. Some of the things I like the history of Charleston. Beautiful townhouses. Just walking around is just such an experience. Fort Sumter, one of the most important national parks, is just a ferry ride away. That's essentially where the Civil War began. And you can take a tour. The National Park Service will give you one of the fort where it all started. There's a really interesting thing that was added a few years ago called this Old Slave Mart. And it's a museum about slavery and the effects of slavery inside basically a room that was originally used to sell people. So it's a fascinating museum. There's a lot of that kind of dirty history stuff, but fascinating history stuff all over Charleston. And the food, of course, fantastic barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Great food.
Okay. And crawfish and all kinds of Southern treats. No, you're going to love... you're going to love Charleston. It really is a special city. And what was that famous novel set in Charleston? Maybe she should read it. Midnight in the Garden of Good
and
Evil.
That's Savannah. Midnight in the Garden of Good
and
Evil. Oh,
darn. You're right. You're right. Yep. Okay. Yep. I'm getting
it.
Read it anyway. Fort? I'm sorry. What was the name
Fort
of the fort?
Fort Sumter. Sumter. I recommend taking the first ferry out in the morning. You might have to make reservations. You can spend as long as you want to out there, but it will be windy because it's a little island out in the harbor. Yeah, it's great. Great stuff.
Okay. All right. I'm hearing music. We thank you so much for calling. To those who are listening, we thank you too. And please, if you're traveling, a hearty bon voyage.
Bon voyage.